We'll call the meeting of Government Operations Veterans Affairs Committee together. For the benefit of the people in the audience, whether here or out in greater Minnesota, this is a continuation of hearings that we've had on starting with the history of the tribal compacts and dealing with people that having people testify that were part of the tribal compact. And now we started last week with Mr. Frank Ball from the Department of Public Safety, and we started into some discussion with him, and this will be a continuation of that meeting. So welcome again for coming in today. I think today is technically a day off for you, but not for the legislature, so thanks for coming in today. I appreciate it very much. I recall Representative Kahn had some questions regarding the $150,000 or whatever. Did you want to continue on with that a little bit, and then we can take some members' questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and yes, it is a day off, but we're just more than happy to be here today.
I'll bet you are.
We left off last Friday with there was some discussion at the $150,000. By the way, I'm Frank Ball, the Director of Public Safety, or Director of Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement for the Public Safety Commissioner Rich Stanek. With me this morning is Senior Special Agent John Willems from the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division. Last week we left off with the $150,000 that was listed in the Indian Tribal Gaming Compact. There was a discussion on that, and I don't feel as though we had ample time to clearly explain that. So with me this morning, John Willems has first arrived with the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division about 14 years ago. He has over 20 years of gaming and gambling enforcement and regulatory experience. He is the senior agent in charge and oversees our gaming involvement with the Indian Gaming throughout the state of Minnesota. And I'd like to defer that to him, Mr. Chair, so he can adequately explain that $150,000.
Very good. Thank you very much. Welcome to our committee. Just for clarification, this is enforcement of checking on slot machines and overseeing the blackjack, or is it just one or the other or both? And welcome to their committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, again, my name is John Willems, and I am a senior special agent with the Alcohol and Gambling Enforcement Division. The answer is that I think if you will allow me to answer the question, I think it will clearly come up to say it's both, but we'll see. I think it's important for the members of the committee to remember the sequence of events when it comes to the matter of the tribal state compacts. In the first event was that the state negotiated an agreement for what are called video games of chance, what I may refer to as video slots or machines, to interchange those terms. But that agreement was basically accomplished in the late 1980s, early 1990s, approximately 1989, 1990. Nine of those agreements were in place. It wasn't until some time later, some couple of years later, in fact, that the state entered into negotiations for what became known as the Compact for the Control of Blackjack. That distinction or sequence of events, I believe, is important for the committee and the legislature to recall, because in the first event, the Video Games of Chance Agreement, there was no funding, zero. There is no funding provision in that agreement. For whatever reason, the state did not negotiate in a funding mechanism to it, and yet those duties were assigned to the division. One can speculate forever why that was the case, but in the end, apart from some fee-based work, a great deal was passed on to agencies such as the Federal Bureau of Investigation, there was no funding to go along with the work related to the Video Games of Chance Agreement. Some 2 years later, the state entered into negotiations with the tribes over the matter of blackjack. And from a particular point of view, the technical point of view, I participated in some of those negotiations. During that time, there was a conversation about the issue of funding. The division looked at it and said, over and above the work that we currently perform, and again, remember, this is now some 12 years ago, that we believe that it would require the equivalent of two additional agents and their resource, the equipment that goes with them and the funding to maintain them in operation. I realize these are hours, representative of hours or equivalent hours to what we consider to be positions. That was how the $150,000 number was arrived at. Now, in today's market and today's world, some 12 years later, two special agents' salary and benefits exceed the $150,000 limit. We've never been directed to keep track of our costs with relative to tribal gaming, you know, the number of hours that we have expended or that kind of thing, at least from any perspective that I know of. So from that answer, it's really difficult for us to tell you how many state dollars are expended in the regulation of tribal gaming. We know the $150,000 is expended, and we know that that in today's dollars is not sufficient to cover the cost of the two agents, but we can't answer that question cleanly. So while I hope that clarifies somewhat, at least it leaves some confusion, I know, to the answer.
Okay. We have some members that would like to ask some questions, if it's okay at this point. Is that all right? You ready? Representative Newman, you're first on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ball, could you tell us whether or not your department has in place a written procedures manual which dictates how you conduct your casino inspections?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we have established a policy that goes along with what a agent would do with Indian gaming. And we just drafted that up just in the past couple months. Before that, no, the agents that have been assigned to Indian gaming have worked and been trained with the Gaming Commission from the various, from the 11 tribes, through working with the independent testing laboratory that we mutually agreed upon as would be the overseeing force as it kind of corrects, as the machines come into the state of Minnesota. Industry standards, technological advancements, and the like. For the most part, the two agents that have been assigned have remained assigned since we've been interacting with the tribal gaming.
Follow-up question, Mr. Ball. Would it be possible for you to provide us with a copy of this recently perfected manual?
Mr. Chair, Representative Newman, yes, we could.
One final question,
Representative Newman.
Would it be fair to assume that the purpose of the inspections conducted by your department with respect to the casinos is to at least in part protect the people who are utilizing the gaming machines?
Mr. Chair, Representative Newman, that's correct.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Boudreaux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Mr. Ball, I have a few questions, too, and please bear with me because I have some kind of extensive question here. Mr. Ball, I have in front of me a copy of a document that's entitled a Casino Inspection Report. You may know what I'm going to ask, but the document does show that your department conducted an inspection at a Minnesota casino where all five slot machines in that casino failed. And I would like to know, first of all, what your department does when this occurs, and do you remove the machines from play, or do you allow them to continue to be used by patrons? Do you re-inspect them? I know that's several questions, but I would like to be able to at least expound a bit on this report, because even though the machines, it shows that they failed, five out of five, the summary still says all aspects of the inspection were found to be in accordance with the tribal state compact. I'm just wondering if the state compact says that if the machines fail, then it's still found to be in accordance as long as they're reported failing. Some of these machines fail in many different ways. Some are somewhat troubling. The fact that we've got revoked programs. I did talk to IGT, which is the International Gaming entity that provides these games. They say if you have a revoked program, that is just simply should never take place in our state, because first of all, this particular machine, and I did get a trace on it, is not a machine that's even approved for Minnesota. So why was it even in the casino in the first place? There are some other issues where the latch, the drop door switch, you reported that it certainly reported did not report the door opening to the online system, which, as in your statement, it should be noted that the above malfunctions rendered the overflow cash compartment vulnerable to unauthorized access and possible theft. In both of these cases, and these are your quotes, the machines were repaired either during the agent's inspection or the agent had received notification from the casino that the machines have been repaired. It doesn't say anything on this one about being in accordance with the compact, as most of the other ones do, but there's a number of these where it leads questions as to whether or not there is some, maybe unlawful activity taking place, revoke programs, doors that are opening, coin operators that aren't working, payouts are not what it should be. This is very serious. According to the entity that I talked to from IGT, they were very worried about this because it reflects on their games. And as you know, that's the largest supplier of gaming machines in North America, and they have some very rigorous standards as far as the integrity of their machines. So could you please tell me again, the question was, what do you do when these occur? And I don't think the fact that status closed on these reports is acceptable. I can't understand how we could even have a summary that says all aspects of the inspection were found to be in accordance with the state tribal compact. If our tribal compact says that machines should fail, and they do fail, and we don't do anything about it, then I think our compact is flawed, totally flawed. It brings some question as to the integrity of the whole gambling system right now in the state of Minnesota, and I guess I need some very, very strong answers to these questions.
I think you're going to get some. Mr. Ball.
Mr. Chair, Representative Boudreaux, I appreciate your remarks, and we are so on top of this within the past 2 months. We've been inundated, our small division, with questions, these very same questions, to include six news agencies, including the AP, that we have had discussion with. All have chosen not to air it after we've adequately answered the questions that they had in front of them. Many of the questions that you have that you're answering to are data that we have provided by citizens that have requested our inspection data. Most of that information is a compilation of raw data, what we find at the casinos, what we find at the machines, and have been over a period of time. We've also prepared three other answers to questions I'm sure will be coming. So the best way to answer this, Mr. Chair, I'd like to defer to John Williams, who's interviewed by five agencies, and a short overview of this will adequately, hopefully, answer those questions for you. News agencies, I'm sorry, if that's acceptable.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boudreaux, in response to those questions, generally what happens are our agents perform unannounced random inspections, and based on information that we provided earlier, we try to visit each of the properties at least four times per year, and in accordance with that, do random inspections. The word fail is really a word that we used to generate within our own system, and may in fact be somewhat misleading to the overall impact of the inspection result. The truth is, oftentimes where the machines fail are on mechanical metering, and mechanical metering, for example, has a number of redundant systems in that machine and in the slot management system that take care of that. There's nothing in that failure, say, of a mechanical meter, which are the bulk of these issues in the report that has been provided to numerous people now, and does not affect the integrity of the game, nor does place the player at risk in any fashion. And in fact, metering continues to go on because it happens electronically through slot management systems and through redundant metering systems within there. I believe if the industry was to take a poll, they would like to do away with mechanical meterings because they are simply little mechanical plastic meters that increment and they wear out. With regard to the matter of door switches, it may seem like some of these slot machines and their operations are very sophisticated, but in truth,
tell us what a door switch is.
Well, a door switch, there are a number of switches on these machines. One is the main door switch, another is a logic area access switch, which houses the software of the machine, and then there's the cash compartment door, and there's switches, depending upon where the bill acceptor is located, switches there. These switches on the cash compartment, underneath these slot machines, is generally just a big plastic bucket. And when they go around and do their fills, oftentimes the people, even if they're not careful or if they're inattentive at all, those buckets will smash against those switches and they will knock them loose. And Representative Boudreau is right in our assessment that we do believe that that is a risk, and we do note that on our agreement. But again, the player, the integrity of the machine for the player is not jeopardized. And to that end, the machine performs as the machine is supposed to, except for these technical areas. With regard to revoke programs, rare instances have we run across that. The only thing that I can tell you is that finding them shows the success of the inspection program, not the failure of the program. With regard to remedy, the compacts allow for us to report this information to the tribal gaming authority or agency, which we do. And then they have, per the terms of the agreement, I believe 5 days in which to respond. Oftentimes these things are fixed, as noted in that report, right in our presence. Other times the machines are shut down and they're repaired later on. And sometimes, frankly, if it's a mechanical meter and they're busy, the machine continues to run and then they come back and repair it. We also notice up the tribes when we return with a letter to the tribal government saying that these machines had these issues. We call it fail. In a broad sense, they did not meet all the requirements of the agreement, and to that degree, they fail. And then generally we get a response back from the tribes indicating that their tribal gaming authority and commission has seen the repair and that they have responded and checked it and verified to us that that repair has been made. And that, in a broad stroke, is an overview of the inspection process.
How many slot machines are there in the state of Minnesota that you would be inspecting?
Best numbers I can give you, Mr. Chairman, would be somewhere in the area of about 19,500.
And then you do 4%?
Our goal has always been 4%.
So, and you have, you do this with two people in the time frame of a year?
We try to do annually at least 4 visits per year.
Okay. Representative Boudreau, you had a follow-up?
I do have a follow-up because, first of all, Mr. Willems, how do you know that that has been fixed other than you're counting on the word of the person who has the machine in their casino saying that we fixed it? Since if you don't inspect it, how do you know that? And that's one question. The second question is, you've repeatedly said that these are really insignificant violations. They don't affect put a threat to the people playing them, or I'm not sure what your words were, but there are many other violations, one in particular where one machine, and I'm not mentioning the casinos because, first of all, these are the smaller casinos. It's my understanding that there's the larger casinos, we don't even have records of those because they've been lost. And perhaps you could expound on that, either one of you, but it's my understanding we don't have records on the inspections for the larger casinos for the last couple years. And I can't understand how we could lose inspection reports like that. But this machine, this particular machine, failed the inspection as the logic board was found to be unsecured in violation of Section 6.9, Subdivision 8, which is a compact law. In other words, the logic board, it also had its latch missing, rendering the logic board unsecurable. But could you explain what the logic board is and why this inspection was status closed with a violation? Something like this is very serious. I'm told by other operators that I visited with last week, I showed them these reports and they were appalled. These are some folks from Nevada. They were very appalled, thinking that we would even have a system with no integrity as to follow-up of enforcement on this. So first question, if you just tell the casino owners, the operators, that it's failed, it's broken, and then you assume they fixed it, how do you know that it's fixed?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Williams would answer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Boudreau, the answer, I think, and I can't speak specifically to this event, but to answer the questions generally is that it's not to the casino owners that we deal with or the operators of the casino. We tend to deal with, we try to deal with, on a continuing basis, a government-to-government basis, with our peers inside of the tribal government, those regulatory bodies inside of the tribal government. It is those bodies that respond to the questions or the issues that we raise about machine malfunction. Typically, it's those people that respond either in phone call or writing or whatever to notify us that those problems or issues have been resolved. So it's not to the operator of the game itself, it's to the tribal government. And the tribal government representatives are present during the time that we do the inspections, as well as security and a host of other people. They're not done without audience. To that degree, representatives by the tribe. So therefore, they do repair those machines, and they do bring them back into compliance. It's in their vested interest to do so as well, to be in agreement with the requirements of the tribal state compact.
So you go over to the casino, you pick out at random different machines, and you do your inspection. While you're doing that, your counterpart for the tribes would be there with you, and then you bring your report and say this machine did this or this machine is fine, whatever it is, and then you report to them in writing, I suspect, to their enforcement agency, and then they in turn either repair the machine or explain what the situation is. Is that kind of a simplified version of how your day goes?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to respond quickly to that. Well, I've gone on a couple of these inspections. I'm relatively new to this gaming industry. I come from a 30-year law enforcement background.
Right.
During this inspection, when the agents go to the various tribes, and this is all the tribes, not just the northern tribes, but the southern tribes as well, accompanying them, the agents, is a slot technician. There are people that actually repair these machines on the spot. Accompanying them is the security officer for the tribe. Mm-hmm. Accompanying them, they're also on surveillance or being videotaped, and there has to be a redundancy key system to get into the machines. I stood back in awe. It's about an hour and a half per machine to inspect these things. The comment that I wish that Agent Williams would have remarked to is that once it's explained to the newsman, it's very much like you're driving an automobile home from work, and you're stopped by a state trooper, and you're given a fix-it ticket to have the taillights repaired. Your car still functions; it'll still get you home, but you have to get that ticket repaired. There's more damage done against these machines by people who are trying to cheat the machines for the tribal gaming that they discover during the inspections as well. We're found in kicked in doors, we're found in slugs brought in, and the machines are inoperable. But since, and this maybe I could respond somewhat to the lost data, is the data is crunched in. It's raw data that's put in. We used to have forms that we used to fill out on per machines per casino. But now we've gone to the technical advancement of a laptop computer that hooks right into the Covitron that we get from the independent gaming testing facility on how to inspect these machines. We find these little things wrong. And granted, maybe we shouldn't use the word fail. Maybe we should change that. But it works for our inspections. The machine failed the inspection. It did not fail the integrity of what the machine was designed for in the compact. In so much as that, the lost data, years ago we had the forms. Now they enter the raw data into a laptop computer. The data was lost in question when one of the agent's laptop, the computer programmer from the IT division, updated the programming and went over all of that raw data that was in there. That's been remedied. The second agent reduced his reports to a written form, which those are the forms that we've been able to provide for the public. This agent that lost that data, the data is still there, and it's available at the tribes. If somebody have a specific place, date, time, or event, we will certainly get the information from the tribes and their gaming entities. There was no data lost to show that any loss of the integrity of any of the gaming machines were playing in public. And I say that with such fortitude, I'll bring these special agents in to testify in that regard. I thought I'd bring the senior agent in to testify in that same remarks. I hope that somewhat answers two of those questions that the
Let's find out. Resident Boudreau, does that help you?
Well, to the point about losing the data on the machine, Mr. Chairman, I believe we have recovery processes for that kind of a system. If we should lose information on a laptop, that is recoverable. There are options to do that. I think it's pretty serious that we would totally rely on one maybe piece of equipment for that kind of a report. And especially, it seems, you know, maybe coincidental that it's the largest casino too, and we should always have backup systems for our reports. I can't understand how we'd have a department without a backup system. You know, even we back up our stuff, and we're not a department. We're just trying to make sure that we cover all of our bases. I think that should be certainly an issue of the integrity of our gaming system in Minnesota. And I believe what we're seeing here is maybe a difference of opinion as to whether these failings or these revoked programs or all of the things that have been mentioned are really substantive. I think they're substantive. The operator I talked to from another state thought they were substantive. The IGT people, the gaming technology folks, think they're substantive. And the fact that we have no means of verifying that those have been corrected or fixed is really problematic to me. And the fact that we have, until only 2 months ago, developed a policy and procedures manual about how we approach this is very troubling to me. So I'm not trying to place blame. I'm just trying to show that our system is very inadequate in overseeing and enforcing our current situation of casino gaming. And I think we need to take this under advisement, members, and do something about it to make sure that there's integrity to these games for the patrons who are playing them. And that is about protection. It's not about maybe a headlight being out. It's about protecting the public and assuring that there isn't unlawful activity taking place. And some of these machines show that there is unlawful activity or potential for unlawful activity taking place with drop doors open that shouldn't be open. And I think that in itself brings question to the integrity of the whole system. So I thank you for allowing me to ask you these questions. They need to be asked. I know it's a tough issue, a tough situation, but we shouldn't be afraid to make it better.
Mr. Ball, if it takes an hour and a half per machine to inspect with two inspectors and there's 19,500 of them, how many machines would you estimate how many machines would you estimate that you inspect within a 6 months or a year's time frame?
Mr. Chair, thank you. First of all, we try to get 10 machines in a day shift at a casino. We'll try to get at least 10 machines in. Some are quicker than others. Some are a little bit more complicated.
Okay.
Again, the failure.
The hour and a half is a generalistic.
It's generalistic. Okay. That's what it took when they were trying to walk me through. Of course, I had all these questions that probably right. streamed that up. But, Mr. Chair, I do have two quick responses,
yeah.
if you might allow.
Yep.
First of all, the policy and procedures, as a law enforcement agency, we could have a policy and procedures for anything. The State Patrol, which is one of our sister agencies under public safety, has a policy and procedure for everything. BCA has policies and procedures for everything. We didn't have a policy and procedure working with Tribal Gaming because it's another body of government. No one told us how to do this. When we were created by the legislature back in 1989, they said go forth and work with Tribal Gaming and establish a procedure, which we did. No one knew that this would accelerate to such a level that it has. And we've tried to stay up with the most current technological advances we can to ensure the integrity. We are the gatekeepers for the integrity of gaming in the state of Minnesota. You created us as a law enforcement agency. We have investigated criminal activity in the casinos with Tribal Gaming. We actively pursue all forms of illegal and lawful gambling venues in the state of Minnesota. And I do that with a small staff. And we think we're doing the right thing with Tribal Gaming. We work closely with them. We have open lines of communication. They have a vested interest in doing the right thing. And that's what we feel as though we're doing in public safety is doing the right thing. And we welcome any suggestions or fortitude that any of the legislative body would have. But we do feel as though we're doing the right thing for the citizens of Minnesota.
Thank you. Representative Jacobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ball, I've got a number of similar questions to what Representative Boudreau has when I'm not here, I'm a staff auditor, so I'm kind of doing a similar type of function in my real world job. So the questions I have, you said you have targeted doing the site visits four times a year. Are you at this point holding to that four times a year?
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we're not even coming close. We're lucky to get 1%. Possibly, we'd like to. We established a 4% mark so we could go in arbitrarily, and the best we can get is that 1% to 3% level on a good day.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ball, at that level of observation, do you think it's technically prudent to say that you're doing a thorough job?
Mr. Chair, Representative, when I first got here, one of my main concerns was how we are getting along with Tribal Gaming. We don't have complaints against Tribal Gaming. The complaints that we typically have from the citizens that go there is that either they're excluded, which we don't really get involved with that, or particular machines are not paying out to the percentage that the consumer doesn't feel as though they're paying out. And they'll give us the machine, or they give us the site, or they give us the location, or any additional information that a person would make. And we cut an ICR, initial crime report, just like any other police agency, and we're just not getting the volume of complaints that people are alleging to, and we've got that documented.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I think I'll change my direction a little bit. I have a hard time. I'll make a statement and I'll change direction. I have a hard time believing that at 1% max that you're able to do a very efficient and effective job. Maybe you're not getting the complaints. That's fine. But in my line of work, if I was doing 1% of what I'm there to look at, I have a real hard time justifying it from a statistical standpoint. I suspect I could probably see my license go away if I was operating at a 1% level. But the next area I'd like to look at is when you actually go into a site, how many machines do you visit? Or test, excuse me?
Mr. Chair, would it be proper to have Mr. Williams respond to this? He oversees that, and I think he can help you out, Representative, with those percentages. That's acceptable.
Sure, that's fine.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I just to add some, perhaps to affirm what you're saying, we our goal is 4%. We kind of arrived at that number, rightly or wrongly, based on what we understood the perceived rate of logic used to with relate as it relates to income tax and audit and threat of detection and presence. Our understanding is that historically has fallen around a 4% level. You may know that to be true or not true. But at a 4% level, the threat of detection or presence usually is significant enough that it encourages people to rethink what they do. So we've set a 4% threshold based on other people's observation about the psychology of those things. You're right, we have not arrived at the 4% threshold for reasons that I hope are obvious to that. But we have to have a goal. The difficulty in hitting 100% would be overwhelming. And at what level does the threat of detection arrive? And we set the percentage level at that amount. The other thing is, the truth is, we average about 3 visits per year in the casinos.
Mr. Chairman, and I'll leave it open to either of you. On an actual visit, how do you select your games? How do you know which machines you're going to test? Is that a random decision on the part of your staff, or how is that arrived at?
Moment, please.
Yep.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Williams, would like to
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the answer is fairly simple. It is random. We just randomly select those machines. If we've had complaints about similar machines in the past, we might target a particular brand or flavor of machine for review elsewhere if we run across a particular area of concern, if you will. If it's new technology, we like to try to take a look at new technology and focus on the things that are new on the floor so we can learn how to properly inspect them and deal with them. And plus, they would be more recent approvals to verify the approval process. So the agents themselves that do the inspections determine which machines that they're going to set. Now, bear in mind, these are these inspections that are separate and apart from those where we may have a player complaint, and it's a specifically targeted inspection to a particular machine or bank of machines.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
One short comment.
Yeah.
While I was at one of the casinos with the agent, they wear their credentials. They have a badge, and they show their credentials, and they actually put a cape over the machine, and they shut it down. The uniformed security man shows up, the compliance people show up, the slot techs show up, and then our agent shows up. We've had citizens come up and say if we're inspectors, and we say we're from public safety, and they'll call attention to the machine, and we'll go inspect that machine while they're there. Okay. And that's been known to happen, too. Thank you.
One more question, yeah. Mr. Chair. Mr. Ball, it sounds very much to me like you're in a position where maybe you're underfunded or certainly understaffed. It's pretty clear at this point. How come we haven't seen any requests to increase that staff?
Mr. Chair, Representative, good question. I've been here for 3 years. My predecessors, I don't know. I don't know what the policy was at that time. I came in when things were just really tight with government cutbacks and the like, and we just haven't come forward because it's not a policy issue that I would get involved in. We're trying to do the very best we can with the staff we have, and I want to make sure that this committee realizes that we also work extensively with the three other venues of gaming in Minnesota, which also have increased sizably, including your card room. Including the new application for new horse racetrack up in Forest Lake. We do the background investigations for those. Those are the same agents that do that work, that do the work with the casinos. So why we haven't come forward, that's a policy issue, and we're not really at a position to say anything. The best I can do is just give this information to my commissioner.
Mr. Commissioner would go to actually a different committee because it's public safety. Representative Haas?
I think in the presentation last week we heard that there's only, I think there's like 180,000 a year comes out of the, or 150 comes out of the compacts just to cover this. When I saw that figure, I thought that was extremely low. And I think that this should be, you know, since it is the gaming industry is what we're policing, it should be the gaming industry that pays for it, not the citizens of Minnesota out of the general fund. So that might be an area we may want to have discussion with the group that has the compacts to see if we can get some increased funding there, because I think it is important to increase the inspections of these machines.
Representative Lippman to that?
Thank you.
Yeah, I guess I was just trying to follow on from the prior day of Representative Kahn's into this. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ball, if there weren't any Indian gaming in Minnesota, would the change in fiscal impact to your office be only $150,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lippman, the $150,000 comes right from the 11 tribes, right to us.
No, I
if there weren't that, we wouldn't have the $150,000.
Well, no, I understand that. Well, let me try to rephrase, which is there's no subsidy from any other source. I mean, you can entirely police or review the 11 Indian gaming casinos with the $150,000. I mean, as Representative Haas says, that sounds a little bit low, but I'm just wondering if there's any cross subsidies from any other source.
Mr. Chair, there's no other source. If we were to expend more time and effort into Indian gaming, it would have to come out of the general fund.
Okay. And is your testimony that isn't happening?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lippman, we're doing the best we can with the resources that we have.
I don't doubt that, Mr. Chairman, but what I'm trying to understand is what resources are dedicated to oversight of Indian gaming. Is it only $150,000?
Mr. Chair, Representative Levin, that's correct. There is no other resources, state money dedicated to that.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ball, maybe you can tell me what level of oversight or man hours you can purchase with $150,000.
Mr. Mr. Chair, Representative Lippman. John, you might want to take that one?
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lippman, I'm not sure you were here earlier when we talked about this issue about in response to Representative Kahn's question at the end of last week's hearing. And that had to do with the differences in the two compacts. What $150,000 buys is less than two agents in today's dollars, is less than two agents' salary and benefits. When that agreement number was reached, that number was reached in consideration of the additional work that Compact on Blackjack would require of the division in 1992. We're some 12 years down the road. Things have changed, economies are different, and we now have less than their salary and benefit packages being covered by the $150,000. I can only believe, given the amount of work that we do in this, that the rest of that is state general fund dollars. I'm not aware of any other funding source beyond this.
Two very briefly, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bell. So just so that I understand, less than two agents is the department's commitment to reviewing the 11 Indian gaming casinos. Do I have it correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lippman, that is correct.
Pardon me?
There are 18.
18, forgive me. Okay.
11 are in the compact.
11 are in the compact.
Though.
Okay.
Tribes.
Yeah. But well, let's just cope with the ones that are participating in the compact. You have less than two agents for those 11.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lippman, it's as simple as this. They have more casinos than we have agents.
Okay.
In the entire department.
Yeah.
So we have committed two agents that a portion of their time goes out to Indian gaming.
18.
They're also involved with other responsibilities as they're described.
Okay.
Okay.
Very last question.
I hope so.
And I'm sorry to be.
We have others in light waiting. That's fine.
Yes. No. I understand. Are there meaningful comparisons we can make with other states as to similar size Indian gaming casino operations and state oversight? I mean, as far as man hours.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lippman. Yes, we can. And John might have that information fairly available.
Sir.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lippman. I'm just not quite clear, if you could bear with me as to your question. Are you asking, do we in fact do more than the two agents? Do we expend more man hours than the two agents, or are we limited? Do we limit ourselves to the two agents?
I understood that the level of effort the state of Minnesota does is less than two agents, part of their time. Was the answer that we got for $150,000?
Okay. Well. The truth is, because of the differences in the agreements and the role that we have under the Video Games of Chance agreement, which we are obligated to perform that work, we expend, I believe, more man hours than is being replaced by the $150,000.
So we're using general fund money then, is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
That would be my clearest assessment of it. Because the Video Games of Chance compact only intended for, there was no funding mechanism in that for that work.
So,
and if you read the video game, if you read the Blackjack compact, the funding mechanism is for the work under that compact. That is where the $150,000 is found.
So if I understand your testimony, and Mr. Chairman, $150,000 buys us less than two agents part of the time on Blackjack, and then some other amount of resources to follow Video Games of Chance.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. At some other time, I'll explore other issues.
Representative Nabok?
Thank you, Mr. Ball. Well, I guess it's pretty clear, as I understand it, that we cannot increase that $150,000 a year without some sort of renegotiation with the tribes, because that is part of the contract, that specific number, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that is correct.
Okay. Mr. Ball, going back to this issue of whether the games are paying out the percentage they're supposed to pay out, I understand there's a percentage payout that is specifically agreed to in the compacts. I understand that the tribal communities are supposed to submit to an audit, and an audit is done each year underneath the compacts to presumably check on whether that part of the compact is being satisfied. Are there audits done every year for each community, Mr. Ball, and do those audits show that the compact is being complied with in regard to that payout?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the audits, to the best of my knowledge, are being conducted each year. That was a part of the compact initial discussion. We do look at the audits when we're on site and doing the inspection, in so much as the percentage payout, that is part of the compact, and that's one of the things we look for when we do actually do the inspection of the machine. We pull the chip out and make sure that it's paying out to the agreed upon percentages.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Ball, does your department do the audits or contract for the audits then, or is that some other department that does that?
Mr. Ball. Mr. Chair, Representative, the tribes have to have an independent auditing firm come in and prepare that audit. We have a chance to review those audits. If the independent auditing firm has concerns, that's where we would start inquiring. And it's a certified independent audit that is required.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Mr. Ball, so the tribes at their expense are responsible for hiring an auditor. That auditor audits the tribal communities' casinos, and if they have concerns, do they talk to you, or do you have an opportunity to get a copy and keep a copy of each of those audits?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we're presently involved in a legal situation involving those audits. Prior to 2 years ago, some of the tribes would bring in audits. Some of the tribes would not. At present, we are inspecting the audits on site at the respective bodies of government to make sure two things. One is that the yearly audit is completed, and to review any comments that the auditor would have regarding their gaming organization, and we would respond accordingly.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Ball, so the audits are being done. Do you specifically ask for and inspect the audits of each tribal community each year?
Mr. Chair, Representative, on our inspections at the site, the agents will ask to see the yearly audit. We are not taking possession of the audits at this time.
Okay,
Mr. Ball, you do the audit every casino every year. Is that correct? Once a year?
Mr. Chair, they are to have a certified audit each year.
And you go to each casino or each tribe to get the audit, is that correct?
But Mr. Chair, we don't get the audit. That's where it's confusing. Years past, they used to send some audits in, and then some didn't. We now, on our enhanced inspections, when we go, we make sure that the audit is completed.
Mr. Chair, to that point,
yeah, that's
are the agents qualified, you know, to review the audit and to look at the financial numbers, and, you know, what are they really looking for in there? Because usually when you have the advice of a CPA or somebody who went through the audit to advise you, not just, you know, reading it and looking at it.
Mr. Ball?
Mr. Chair, Representative John Willems will discuss that. He oversees that area as well.
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the with regard to the skill set of the agents, you're right. We are not auditors in that, nor do we make a claim to be an auditor. But most of the agents are white collar crime backgrounds, financial crimes, and they are somewhat comfortable with working with financial documents. There are those such as myself that are certified fraud examiners and others. But you have to bear in mind what the compact says, and the compact says that the tribe will retain an certified independent auditor, perform an annual audit, that the annual audit will be made available to the department. The department looks at it, and as we generally know, audits simply are balance sheets performed by certified auditors. They typically list assets and liabilities, and at the end they zero out, and occasionally if it's a good audit, there's some notes and some things in there. What the compact says is that that we review that, and that we can provide comment to the driver, to the auditor. Again, it's this written communication. They really does not seem to be clear that we can direct their work or direct their work product in any fashion, other than review and make comment.
Well, Mr. Chair, to that point.
Navarro,
Mr. Williams, is it?
Wellams.
Okay. Sir, as I understand the compact, if we feel there is some additional work that needs to be done in an audit that wasn't done, or we have some additional questions, the state can, at its expense, direct the auditor to do some additional work. Have we ever done that?
Mr. Williams?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knobloch, no.
Okay. You still have the floor. Are you done with your questions? Move on to somebody else?
We can move on.
Okay, Representative Thiessen. Nothing? Okay, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ball, you know that you and I have met before on some of these issues, and in August of 2002 you met with some of my constituents because we had some grave questions that that you tried to answer. And I appreciated that meeting and you taking the time to do that. But I'm perplexed. How can a tribal government have members present if an inspection is unannounced?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, in the compact or the agreement that was made, if they have to provide, we show up unannounced, and within, I believe it's 20 minutes, they have to have somebody from security there, somebody from compliance or the gambling commission there, and be ready for the inspection at that time. We've also sent agents in on compliance of the blackjack, for example, and participated as actual players. And typically when they do the inspections, they do that because their internal operational rules of their gaming commission dictates that any machine that's open has to be under surveillance and has to be logged in and logged out, and that's why the people accompany us with the inspection. But the ones that I personally witnessed, is make no doubt about it. The agent is in charge, and he can look and touch and feel and anything he wants in the machine.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Now, I have before me a printout, a tape from one of the video slots that showed a 66% payout, and I noticed that the compacts, and I don't believe this has been amended, but I would appreciate your telling me, that that video games of chance with game outcomes not affected by player skill shall pay out a minimum of 80% and not more than 90%, but that video games that are affected by player skill, and it's interesting that it names, well, draw poker and blackjack, I guess is what it names, but that's 83% and no more than 98%. But for Keno, this is what is interesting, but in no instance less than 70%, 75% of each wager. So the question I want you to answer, Mr. Ball or Mr. Wellams, is if you find a machine is not paying out what is prescribed, that variance that's prescribed in the compacts, what do you do?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, first of all, in answer to a specific question, and I would certainly have our staff meet with you on that, on your specific incidents you're talking about, but it should be noted that in the lifetime of that machine has to pay out the parameters that are outlined in the compact. That comes to Minnesota from the independent testing lab, is set for that amount. And to the best of my knowledge, we have never found a machine that it pays out less than what is described in the compact. If you have a specific incident, and that is out of play, if that came from someplace, we would certainly be able to talk with you about that and investigate that. But when we inspect the machines, the electronic device we use to inspect the machine, matter of fact, John, could you explain a little bit about that computer chip in there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, the part of the problem or the difficulty with payouts or rate of returns as they're described in the compact is, in fact, that those are aggregated over the life of the machine, and the machine, for statistical purposes, is configured to be about 17 million plays. And at any one point in time, you may have some particular deviation from that. So what you really need to do is take a look at the lifetime of the game or that it's been in operation. In fact, it's very difficult when a new game comes on the floor for it to have established any percentage. It just, again, is common sense. It's new on the floor, it has no history, and it's very hard to evaluate that. But the agents do take a look at that. If there is a question or concern about the percentages as they're being calculated, and the agents do watch that. Then they also go to the slot management system, which hopefully has the more of the lifetime totals than perhaps they're getting. They also have to factor in things like that may not be clear for whatever reason and verify hand pays and make sure that those are in fact being calculated in to the rate of return to the machine, and some varying other issues that come into that. If there's still any doubt about that, historically the machine has been pulled from play until we can verify it even further. But to this particular point in time, I can't think of a time where we really found, after evaluating all of the information, that we had a machine that was paying out a percentage lower than the agreement. That doesn't mean that we won't find one. It just means that we continue to look. We're sensitive to the issue. This is, in fact, a basic player protection issue, and is one that we draw a very strong line on.
But we have to keep in mind that you're only hitting visiting for inspection purposes so many machines, mm-hmm. which is a very limited number of the 19,500.
Absolutely, and we would be happy to follow up on Representative Erickson's fact situation and take a look at that and respond to that.
To that point, Mr. Representative Haas, did you have a question?
I had a question. Mr. Willem, when you go in and look at the machine, do you also look at the maintenance logs of all the machines and just review them to see that there's regular maintenance done on slot machines, or that a machine that has had problems in the past or continuous problems is either pulled off the floor or something like that? Do you ever go into that, or is it just walking in and inspecting just the random machines? Or do the casinos keep maintenance logs? Maybe that's on them.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, believe that they're required under the minimum internal control standards to keep certain records about accesses to that game and those kinds of logs. I'm not sure specifically about maintenance records. I know that access logs are typically kept within the machine, and agents in the course of their inspection do have occasion to take a look at them. I am not sure that we specifically at this juncture have viewed maintenance records per se.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ball or Mr. Wellems, do you notify your commissioner if there's anything that is not up to standard after these inspections? Do you do that notification?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we also, a little bit from what you said, we do negotiate with the tribes for the technological advancements. They're called technical amendments. As these computers, these slot machines become more advanced, more technical in nature, there's some departures that we have to discuss. And we do discuss that with the commissioner. The commissioner is the one that signs off on that. We also work for the Minnesota Attorney General's office regarding those technical amendments. But if there were a violation on our inspections, if there were a something of grievance nature, that it would probably get to the point where the machine is out of compliance, as there was some discussion, yes, we would contact the Commissioner of Public Safety.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Ball. When you were interviewed on KSTP Channel 5 in January, you told a reporter that all of the slot machine mechanical malfunctions which your department has found while conducting casino inspections were minor hardware issues which do not affect the gaming or affect the game. What is the technical training that allows you to make this statement?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, John Willems can address that and the training that the officers go through.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, throughout the years, these agents are primarily trained on the job. As you may be aware or should be aware, there is not a training school for agents in the field of inspection of gambling machines, such as the case, as far as I know, nationally. There have been minor efforts to start that, and how successful those are, I do not know. In the case of my own background, I come from a jurisdiction that had around some 13,000 video games in bar operations across the state. I ran and supervised a testing lab that oversaw that. I worked with the development of the testing and review processes for that laboratory. Developed national standards for video games of chance to meet. and have worked extensively in this field for nearly 20 years. The benefit of that education, however good or bad, has been passed on to those agents. Just recently, for example, we did 4 hours training with WMS on their new Bluebird gaming platform, with the focus for regulatory bodies being the focus being towards regulatory bodies and being towards the inspection of these games. We regularly attend industry training or industry-sponsored training for regulated bodies. We also attend training and participate in a variety of seminars and stuff that are done across the country. Most of our agents come to us with some 15 or 20 years of police experience before they come here, and so they're all seasoned investigators and come with good reputations not only in their own community but within the state of Minnesota. And these are the people that are entrusted with overseeing or engaging in the machine inspection process on behalf of the state. So there's a host of education that goes on with that, but by and large, it's on the job or from the industry itself.
So, Mr. Chair and Mr. Willems, are you saying that when you inspect, it is you or Agent Shingledecker plus a technician? Plus all these others who, for example, security from the casino, someone from the tribal government, which I would question why that occurs when I know Grand Casino is operated by the Corporate Commission. So I would think someone from the Corporate Commission would be present. But is that what this array of inspectors consists of then?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, the crowd, if you will, tends to gather when we've announced our presence and told them that we're there to inspect. There are requirements for them to notify their gaming regulatory agencies that we are present on their property. There are requirements for key accesses that require the presence of security. We use the slot technician there to be present, either to assist with the mechanics of opening things or pulling the EEPROMs out. We actually remove the computer chips out of the system. They can be easily damaged. We use their technician in our presence to do that. We insert those into our testing devices. We run through the full scope of the examination. We verify pay tables, various things with that, and then we move on to the next game or machine. Those people generally have a task that they need to perform on behalf of the tribal government or on behalf of the property in accordance with their own internal control policies. And generally along with that, our presence is being recorded, as we know, by the surveillance units because these machines are in fact being opened and things are being recorded.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Willems, how would that compare then to, let's say, an inspection of a casino in Nevada?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, my recollection, the most effective, historically, the most effective inspection program was probably being done by the state of New Jersey.
Okay.
Nevada.
That's New Jersey, that's fine.
Okay. For Nevada, because you ask about Nevada, for a number of years they really didn't have the staff or the time or even the means to inspect games once they were on the casino floors. So it's an entirely different regulatory scheme that Nevada has than, say, other jurisdictions. And there are differences in regulatory scheme. Also bear in mind that they're not operating under the auspices of this tribal state compact agreement. So in the state of New Jersey, at least up until a few years ago, every game that came into the state first was inspected before it hit the floor by state inspectors, and they were staffed at such levels as to be able to do that. And they're actually probably a fairly comparable market, both in terms of numbers of machines and number of casino properties, although their sizes are somewhat different than ours. So their process is a little bit different, and their regulatory scheme is different, but you have to remember, again, the underlying authority for which they do their work.
And Mr. Chair,
I just want to keep. We have one more person who wants to testify from the AG's office, so if we kind of wrap up, and a couple of people have some questions. So,
well, it seems to me, Mr. Chair and Mr. Willems, that because both Nevada and New Jersey practice the open meeting law, and have to divulge information to the public and to the state and to the regulators that there is a certain amount of accountability there that I find is lacking in our system. Colorado certainly must have been concerned because they issued a gaming industry bulletin in 2002 in March, nearly 2 years ago, about what was happening in their industry. Another question, Mr. Ball, I understand that Canterbury spends $920,000 in their enforcement. To what extent are you a part of that $920,000 expenditure that they have to make?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, we are we look at the Canterbury Park, for example, Minnesota Racing Commission, as the same light we look at the Gambling Control Board as one of our clients. They regulate that industry, the horse racing industry, and now the poker room out of Canterbury. Mr. Kruger is the executive director.
Mm-hmm.
He has a division of security. They are funded through the industry. Last session, you folks changed that to where it's dedicated funding right to, they take it right out of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
We are strictly funded by the general fund. We work on them as a as-needed basis. We do have a presence at the card room, presence at the live horse racing. We do their background investigations. Any criminal matters that come to their attention, we will conduct a criminal investigation and follow through with the necessary working with the prosecutors. We have a line item budget for the investigators and the agents, and that comes out of a kind of an as-needed. We don't get involved with the actual expenditures of the Minnesota Racing Commission.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Ball, could you provide us with, and I asked Mr. McCarthy to do likewise, will you provide us of a list of your inspections to casinos and the results of those inspections? And then more importantly, how many written requests you have made according to my copy of the compact of audits, because it specifically says here that the tribes or the operation will make audits, the audits that they have done had done independently and certified, that they make those available to the state upon written request. And I would like you to supply this committee with the written requests that you have made. I know that you're not to disclose any information upon those or obtained in those requests. But that, I think that's very important for the accountability that needs to exist between the state of Minnesota and the various tribes. And can you tell us how many of these audits have been requested? And then what does your office do with these audits once they've been received from the tribes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, it's kind of a two-part question. First of all, I again want to remark that this has been, since I've been here almost 3 years now, this matter has been under litigation. It's presently in the federal system. We're waiting for the results. I noticed you mentioned that someone from the AG's office will be testifying after us. That might be a question that they best can respond to. We've been told that that's still under litigation, and I really don't have much to say to that. But in answer to your question, I've been here for 3 years, and I've never requested a copy of that sent to my office. But the agents have all reviewed the audits upon request on the government, on the Indian lands. When I first arrived here, there was approximately 11 to 17, I forget the exact number, that were there from years ago, back in the mid-90s. They became an issue of data practices, litigation, and that's presently being litigated. For the past 3 years, I have not requested a copy of an audit from any tribal gaming commission or tribal member to be forwarded to my office. But I did make notice to the tribes that we would like to look at the audits when our agents inspect on their property, on their tribal lands. I will go back through our archives and I'll find all requests that have been made. I think that's already been done for some of the requests for data. And I'll give you the best I can do with what you've asked for, Representative Erickson.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Ball, wouldn't it be the Commissioner of Public Safety who would make this request of the tribes?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, yes, it would.
So I'm asking you to check with Commissioner Stanek and to look in the archives in regard to Commissioner Weaver to find out if this was done. You know, we are supposed to get some kind of yearly report, and I'm just wondering, where are those yearly reports? I know that last week one of the testifiers said, well, if there's nothing to report, we don't have a report. But this is high stakes. This is, you know, the public who are enjoying this entertainment, and these compacts are a result of the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, and the dollars are supposed to be helping our tribes. And you know, I think that having audit information would be a revelation to public safety as to whether or not the four stipulations found in the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act are fulfilled, and indeed are the tribal members benefiting, because I believe that President Reagan signed this bill into law because he felt this was a way to help tribal members out of poverty, to have a higher standard of living, to receive educational opportunities that may not have existed before that, and other needs that were and probably still are obvious among some of our tribes. So I think the state of Minnesota is being negligent in fulfilling its compact obligation if an audit isn't requested every year, and that audit reviewed by the commissioner and whomever, if that includes you, and noting among yourselves to report to us, is this indeed helping Indian people? Because that's the number one goal of Indian Gaming Regulatory Act, that it was to help the tribes. And though the dollars can be used for other reasons, I find it very interesting that there certainly is a lot of a political contribution coming out of that money, and I see nothing in the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act that says tribes can use proceeds from gambling for...
We're getting a little bit off the subject here. We want to move on.
I don't want to cut you off,
but I got a couple others. Are you finished? So I can move on to... You have the floor right now. So
Yes, you can move on, Mr. Chair.
All right, Representative Ellison.
But I do want the paper to pass out this.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think I can do this quickly and hopefully with one question.
If we
want
to get the Attorney General's office person up or people up here by 2 o'clock, we can. Go ahead.
Mr. Ball, I am sure that I heard testimony to the effect that there was a total of $150,000 being utilized and nothing was coming out of the general fund. Now, today, I think I heard testimony that there was some money coming out of the general fund with respect to your department. So now I'm confused. So I'm going to ask the question this way. And I'll tell you ahead of time, I'm looking for a dollar amount, not a long explanation. Can you give me an approximate annual amount that is being taken out of the general fund for the purpose of inspecting tribal casinos for compliance with state compacts, and for the purposes of performing compliance tests of games of chance and blackjack at the casinos?
Mr. Ball.
Mr. Chair, Representative Newman, I'll do this as quick as I can. And yes, I did testify to that because all I know is my accounting parameters. In my accounting practices in the Department of Public Safety, my finance office says you have $150,000 that can be drawn from for salaries. And we take a portion of the salaries out of the two agents, which pretty much is the bulk of that $150,000. That's not accounting my time that I meet with Tribal Gaming. That's not accounting our special agent in charge's time, which is a pretty good sized salary, that is negotiating technical amendments. That's not accounting Special Agent Willem's time for answering questions or the support for doing reports, transcribing reports by office assistants and the likes. I can compute all that for you, but I only have one amount to draw from. It's $150,000. And the salaries of those two agents far exceed that $150,000 alone. So if there's additional costs, it would be the cost that we would have supporting those two two officers.
Representative Newman.
My question is, do you have an approximate amount that is being spent on an annual basis by your department out of the general fund with respect to Indian gaming?
Mr. Ball. Mr. Chair, Representative Newman. No, I don't.
Thank you.
Representative Allison.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Ball, could you please detail, if you would, other levels of accountability, scrutiny that tribal gaming undergoes, aside from the state focus on the issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative, Mr. Williams, you're talking about federal regulatories?
Mr. Chair, yes. In fact, I guess my question is the state the last backstop as it relates to tribal gaming, or are there various other levels of scrutiny, accountability to make sure that tribal gaming works as it's supposed to?
Mr. Bowen.
Ms. Walsh.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, the answer is no, the state is not in this alone. And a long time ago, we realized we needed to work in concert with other agencies. The other agencies that are involved on an active basis, of course, are the National Indian Gaming Commission and their regulatory body. They have local offices now in St. Paul. The U.S. Department of Interior, the Office of the Inspector General, they provide services and audits and various things relative to tribal governments and various entities. I know over the years they have done some audits of gaming in Minnesota, particularly for some to deal with some of the questions that have been asked by others here today. We have the U.S. Department of Treasury. They made application of the Bank Secrecy Act and some other tax reporting issues over the years apply to tribal casinos. They monitor those facilities for compliance. And, of course, we have the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which strangely has some regulatory oversight, if you will, in this particular area. Strange because it's unusual for the FBI, but they have responsibility under the Johnson Act, those areas of the federal code that deal with interstate commerce and shipments of machines and gambling devices to and from the reservation. And so they also have, over the years, inspected records of shipments and various things like that. On the other end of this, all of these games are sourced outside of the state of Minnesota. We have no internal manufacturers of them, so the regulatory bodies in those jurisdictions also oversee those manufacturers and distributors of that product. We oversee the manufacturers and distributors of that product independent of the tribal gaming agreements. And in fact, Legislature 92 gave us specific laws and authority to do that. We do that often. And we have all of those people watching. And in the background of all of this is this independent testing lab, Gaming Laboratories International, which is an independent testing lab that essentially each and every day sends us letters certifying that these games meet the specific requirements of the agreement as outlined in the tribal state agreements. Now, I'm probably forgetting some smaller agencies in there, customs with international shipments and other things that happen there. But by and large, that's the primary group that deals with it, and it is that group that we work with.
Further necessary questions, as we're eager to hear from the Attorney General, Representative Ellison.
Very briefly, Mr. Chair. So am I correct in stating there, if there are at least six federal regulatory agencies, the state, and independent testing labs, all of which are making sure that Indian gaming is operating as it should. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ellison, that is correct. They are involved to varying degrees, and all of that is done, if you will, as a backstop to the tribal gaming regulatory body itself, which has primary regulatory jurisdiction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Ball, Mr. Williams, thank you so much for your presentation. I guess as a parting request, because we had a number of questions along this line for myself and other committee members, if you could try to detail to the extent that you can, the amount of resources that your office uses to oversee Indian gaming, whether it's in blackjack or video games of chance, as we understand that problem of what it takes to review and what is accomplished by that, we'd be most grateful.
Mr. Chair, just a quick comment.
Representative Haas.
You know, we've heard so much about what we're doing, but I would like to see something, and you know, we don't have time to do it today, but maybe the MICA group can put it together to tell us what the Indian gaming community, what are the casinos doing themselves to make sure that the equipment is maintained, you know, what they spend a year, you know, and their procedures that they go through to keep the integrity of these games going, because, you know, this is their business. And if they're not being run properly or payouts aren't being the percentage they should, that means their revenue is going to drop to the casinos. and it's going to affect their business. So they have to keep the integrity of their games going. So I would like to see something, you know, if they could submit it to us in writing or if they can come back another day and just give us a 15-20 minute presentation on what they're doing internally to provide for the integrity of the games and then how they're working with these gentlemen. I think that would be important.
We can ask them. I don't know if, I don't know how it works, their system works, but we can make the request to them.
Okay.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Rhodes. Would you, Mr. Ball or Mr. Willems, also provide us with some of the correspondence then that you've had with those six regulatory agencies under the federal government? Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming over. Appreciate it. We have two people from the Attorney General's office that are going to come before us. Mr. Ken Peterson and Jeff Lebowski. Nope. I only see one, but that's okay. He's there. Okay, he's coming. Is it a solo act, or do you want to do a duet?
If, Mr. Chair, my name is Ken Peterson. I'm a Deputy Attorney General. Okay. With me is Jeff Lebowski, the manager of Public Safety Division, and if we have some detailed questions, he can help out.
All right. You want to sit up there with him, you can. It's whatever you want. I don't know if you have any opening comments, but I think one of the things that came up was this litigation issue, and I don't know how much you can comment about it, but I suspect if you could share some information, that would be great.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what Chairman Rose is referring to, is, I believe, is litigation regarding the audits, the confidentiality of the audits of the reservations. We have been, the way it worked is that the Department of Administration initially determined that the audits done, this was several years ago, the audits done were not public information. Under Chapter 14, the Attorney General reviews those determinations. I think we have 10 or 15 days to make a determination. We overruled them on this case. So we decided that they were, we came to the legal conclusion that we believe that the audits, as collected by the Department of Public Safety, were public information and available, not confidential and available to the public. We were then, after that determination was made, we were sued, or the Department of Public Safety in the state of Minnesota were sued by three of the tribes, the Shakopee Mdewakan community, Prairie Island community, as well as the Mille Lacs Chippewa tribe. And two of those cases have been settled or resolved, dismissed. One with the Mille Lacs Band with Ojibwe has been dismissed. That was in state court. The I believe that was in state court. The Shakopee one has also been dismissed, and we still have one at Prairie Islands now pending in Ramsey County District Court.
Okay. We have some questions for you, if may, Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since the Attorney General negotiates these compacts and whatnot, do you know if Attorney General Hatch has any particular position on reopening these compacts or thoughts about the previous compacts that were negotiated?
We have, our view is that our role in the compacts were, we did represent the state and the appointed committees done in the late 80s, early 90s, this office did, and did as best it could as in those circumstances. Since that time, the Attorney General has no opinion as to whether or not they should be reopened or not reopened. It's your call or the governor's call. We have no particular opinion. We want to do the best we can legally in whatever format you want. It's not a policy. We do not, in this case, we're not making any policy judgments. It's a policy judgment to be made by the governor and the legislature.
I don't think, my understanding is it's the governor, not the legislature. I don't think we can. We're not involved in the negotiation part of that conflict. Is that correct, Representative Seifert? You're the historian.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding of Mr. Williams' testimony from last week is that you'd have to have the state and the tribes come forward in,
yes,
in mutual agreement,
yes,
to reopen them.
Yes, you do.
Didn't know if he had had any particular feelings on if they should or not. We may find out in maybe 2.5 years or so when he's asked in a separate venue, but I wasn't sure if anyone's even, is there anyone left in the Attorney General's office that helped with the compacts from 15 years ago, 14 years ago?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Seifert, no.
Okay. Representative Lipman?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Peterson, mindful that of your testimony saying about how the various three cases were resolved, Were they resolved with settlements, and are the nature of the settlements public? And if they are public, do you have any knowledge about the nature of the settlements?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lippman, in terms of the two cases which have been dismissed, the audits within the possession of the Department of Public Safety are available to the public right now.
Okay.
The other one is still litigation.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Chair Rhodes. Mr. Peterson, are you privy to the amendments that have been made to the compacts?
Mr. Chairman, Representative
Erickson. The technical amendments.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, I'm not familiar with them, no.
Why would those technical amendments not be a part of your file in regard to the compacts? Because I would hope that you have the compacts on file.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, yes, we do the compacts on file. I have one right here with me. I do not do the actual work on the technical ones, any technical amendments that have been made to the compacts. I myself am not. I presume that there have been technical amendments made to the compacts. We do have them. Our office has been involved. I personally have not been involved.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Peterson, yes. Mr. Wellams said that there are amendments that have been made in the technical areas, and someone needs to provide us with those. I don't know if it's your office or public safety or Mr. Ball's office, but we need to know how many of those technical amendments have been made since the compacts were originally signed.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, we will work with Mr. Ball and make sure that they are given to you.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Is there any other questions for the witness? Representative Erickson.
Yes. Thank you, Chair Rhodes. I'm looking at correspondence that your office had with a citizen who has some concern about the manufacturers or the distributors of the video games, and I'm not sure if you responded to that letter, but I'm sure you're aware of this letter, and I'm just wondering, to what extent do you follow up with citizen concerns about complaints that are filed against public safety, or in this case, the enforcement division?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson, I'm not familiar with the specific letter you're referring to. However, generally our policy would be to respond to the individual, to the citizen, and explain that the Department of Public Safety is charged with the examination of the machines, or that they could contact Department of Public Safety or contact the proper officials with the Indian Gaming Commission or any of the other places. We do not have, our office would not have a line responsibility vis-a-vis operation of the machines.
Mr. Peterson, I don't know if Mr. Lebowski does this or not, but who deals with the technical amendments in your office then?
Mr. Chairman, we have a lawyer named Joe Newton who's out of town this week. Uh-huh. He couldn't be here today.
Any other questions? What is your role in the in this whole scenario? When I say you, I mean the department's role. The Department of Public Safety comes and says we got a problem here. You deal with it. If you don't hear any problems, if the citizens contact the Attorney General's office saying this or that happened, you get involved that way too.
Mr. Chairman, our role would be twofold. One, if in event a casino contests the findings of an audit or an examination of the by the Department of Public Safety and takes them to federal court, we'd represent the department. The second would be in our overall representation of the department, where they call us up, come over, ask questions on a specific issue. We have no specific responsibilities granted in statute or in the compacts for any work in this area.
Okay.
But in terms of the citizen, we do try. Attorney General Hatch and I think all the, it's fair to say Attorney General Hatch and all the members of our office do try the best to try to provide the the best and proper response to whatever question the citizen may have. And try, if it comes up, if an issue would come up that would show some serious problems on behalf of a given casino or operational machine, we would certainly try to bring it to the proper authorities to take care of it.
However, if they're a sovereign nation, you can only go so far. Your authority doesn't go completely, correct?
No. No, Mr. Chairman, no, it doesn't.
Okay. Any other questions?
Well, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman,
Representative Erickson.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson, you know, you do represent all the people of Minnesota, so why would the AG's office not take seriously or more seriously a complaint from a citizen about what might be happening in regard to the inspections of the machines at our casinos?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Erickson.
Mr. Peterson.
Once again, I'm not familiar with what the specific question or letter which you're referring to. We would hope we would respond very seriously to whatever his or her complaints might be. However, the legislature has delegated responsibilities for handling these matters to the Department of Public Safety, and the state's role is delegated to the Department of Public Safety, and their officials would be the proper authorities for dealing with a given issue. But once again, I must say that I don't know the specific issue you're talking about.
Any other questions? Any other concerns? Thank you very much for coming before us, Mr. Peterson. If there's no other business before, we have the minutes of the meeting. Representative Lippman moves the minutes with one change in it, and that is it says on Tuesday, February 11th, it should be Wednesday, February 11th. All in favor of the motion of the minutes as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are carried as adopted and amended, and thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.